to Stories for the Ages. My name is John Schuster, and this podcast is about what the aging and ripening and maturing process is. And we look at it from a fairly developmental point of view. What I mean by that is, how do we keep growing as we age, even into the very late years? And we'll hear today on how relationships are key to this development process. And you'll hear a wonderful person who at age 87 has a lot to say about friendships. Before we go into that, I want to talk a little bit about the dominant view of how we look at aging. And sometimes we think of youth as the sexy, spicy time of relationships and friendships. There's a book by William Thomas, the great physician who's been working in this area for some time. And the title of the book is called, What Are Old People For? What a title. It got the Book of the Year in Consumer Health from the American Journal of Nursing, and it's won some other really fine awards as well. The subtitle of the book is How Elders Will Save the World. So you can see he has a relatively positive view of what eldering is all about. Thomas says it so well when he says this. These are his exact words. There is great power hidden within old age, but we will remain ignorant of the depth and breadth of that power as long as we insist on simply comparing youth to old age. A more useful approach would be to chart, in the context of old age itself, the changes in human capacity that aging calls forth. The doctrine of youth's perfection, in addition to simply being wrong, also distorts and misleads. It confines us to a narrow and uninformed perspective on human experience. It ignores the possibility that there is something vital and true to be grasped and then savored within the distinctively human experience of growing old. Thank you, Bill Thomas. And so, as you can tell, that's informing what we want to cover today. I want to introduce one expert before we talk to our main interview today. And this expert is a Dr. Tom Cole, who is at the University of Texas McGovern Center of Medical Ethics. And he has a long career as a humanistic gerontologist. He got early on in his life, he got very interested in the aging process. And he spent many years devoting his professional life to that. He's working more in medical ethics right now. But Tom has some profound views of what it means to, as we age, how this whole loving and relationship and connection piece makes for the aging process to be filled with significance. Tom, as someone who's looked at this field and I had no idea how personally it started for you, but obviously you were attracted to this topic a long time ago. What do people need to know about the things you've studied that are not generally known by Joe Q public as we look at the process we're going through?
Well, I think they need to know how to be wary or critical of the dominant images that come across consumer culture, whether it's advertisements, whether it's in newspapers, whether it's, you know, on the web. You know, we have these stereotypes of older people as, on the one hand, going downhill, getting sicker and sicker, more and more frail, one foot in the grave, and so on. And then on the other hand, we have the kind of mirror opposite of the golden years, people who are young and healthy and growing and should look like and feel like they were when they were much younger, the sort of 60s, the new 40 or whatever. And there's some truth to both of these stereotypes. People are living longer and living healthier lives. And at the same time, because we live longer, we also get sicker. It's just that the sickness gets pushed, tends to be pushed into the to what we might call deep old age or old, the old old. And so I guess what I'm saying is just push back a little bit against these stereotypes that you see coming at you. So you don't see, you know, you don't actually internalize the idea that I'm really bad if I can't walk straight, if I can't walk without, if I have to be in a wheelchair, if I have to walk with crutches, that, you know, I'm this sort of bad, scary old person that I don't want to be. Or on the other side, you know, don't feel like a failure if you can't run a marathon anymore when you're 70. I once met a donor in Galveston who was a philanthropist for the University of Texas Medical Branch. And I don't know, we were having drinks one night, and he was 70 years old, and he looked at me and he said, you know, I can't get my time down any farther. You know, he was a runner, mm-hmm. and he was in very good shape.
Yeah.
I just can't get my time down any farther. What do you think? I said, you're 70 years old. That's what I said. So beware of these stereotypes and find a way to live your own aging. Dig into your own story. Carry it forward. Recognize the through lines. You know, who have you been? What do you care about? What are you committed to? Where do you get meaning? Whom do you love? Who loves you? Really, people need to take seriously their own evolution, their own development, and try not really to just internalize these images that are kind of forced on us by the culture at large.
Great, great. Well, reason I say great is because when I hear about growth and evolution and development, I can feel that happening to me, and I can see it in the many others who go about this in ways that foster that or at least allow it to happen. And it feels somewhat natural to me. I mean, there's certain kinds of learning I'm doing that's, I suppose, my own doing. I'm willing it. But there's other types of learning and development that seems to be happening without me having to force it or just let it happen.
Right.
Any comments on how we grow? What's the growth process like for us?
Well, I think there's a certain sense in which older people can really cut through the bullshit pretty quickly. They have much less to lose. And, you know, sometimes this can be a good thing or a bad thing, but if their mind is clear and they've maintained a certain kind of relationality and self-confidence, they can come to insights very quickly that come from a kind of wisdom. They're just quick, you know. Someone will ask me a question sometime about a complicated issue, and I will just say, be careful here, or be nice to this person, or that's not going to change, or these people are deluding themselves, or the doctors are giving false hope. So I think insight and the capacity to sort of name certain truths that are sometimes uncomfortable is one thing that evolves sometimes among older people. Not, of course, not all of us.
I want to introduce Pat Adson, an 87-year-old friend of mine who claims her 87-ness with a sparkle and who has some great things to say about friendships at this stage in her life. And Pat is a coach. She's been a psychologist, and she didn't learn to the coaching profession until she was at age 70, so she's been doing that for 17 years. She has many things she could talk to us about, including transitions in career, and we'll hear from Pat talk about what it means to have friends and how she goes about this friendship piece. There's many things we could talk about, Pat, but I want to hear you talk about your friends at this stage in your life. And I will remind listeners that you know loss. You certainly know the loss that comes with aging, because I know you're a widow. I know you've probably lost. I know you lost one son, and so you've had to experience that. But you're on the upside, it sounds like, of your life in many ways right now. So tell us about that, your friends, and other things that engage you.
Well, that's a great question, John, because I think one of the most important things in your life are your friends, and so many people, when they get older, their circle of friendship narrows because people die, move away, you become much more isolated. And I've been fortunate enough to, at various times in my life, be able to make new friends in a way that a lot of people don't have that opportunity. I became a coach when I was 70 years old, and that opened to me a wonderful new community of really, really the most marvelous friends to have at any stage of your life, but especially now. And then I also, so through my work, most of us do meet our friends through our work. And when we stop working or retire, that friendship change circle narrows. I've had wonderful friends all my life, good friends who've been with me in great times of great sorrow and times of great joy. And it's just one of the big blessings of my life. And then 3 years ago, I moved into a retirement community, really sort of dragging my feet, thinking that this is really the end. This is the Hotel California. Check out. There's only one way to leave this place. But I have found there a wonderful new, very interesting circle of friends that I just was totally unexpected. I really didn't think that was going to happen.
So, let me stop you just a little bit, because I'll have you tell us more about these friends. But so this transition at age 84 into a retirement community, or mm-hmm. however you want to phrase it, was something you were not looking forward to at all.
No. I thought that I'm in a beautiful, beautiful place, but I didn't think I would fit. I didn't think I would find friends there. I thought they were people who would have a lot of different interests. And I have met some fascinating people. And I think it's just that you can find people when you're curious enough about other people and interested in them, you can find good friends.
So I like hearing that, because your curiosity has something to do with the equation here, it sounds like, right?
Well, I think so. When you get older, you tend to get very self-centered, and having friends helps you stay connected to the world. And because believe me, we spend a lot of time talking about our ailments.
Uh-huh.
There's the organ recital.
Organ recital.
<In the morning. laughs> and that could become your whole life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is unfortunate to end up where I have.
Great, great. Well, tell us about your friends. Tell us a little bit about your relationships and how they happened and what discoveries you're making.
Well, the circle of friends, first and foremost, that I met at Hudson Institute, at Coaching Institute, where we work, have been, from all over different parts of the country. And you find people who are interested in what you're interested in. And so it's stimulating to have friends like this. And the people at the place where I live now is a place where we can, if we want to, have all of our meals together. And we certainly have, I certainly have breakfast and lunch there every day. Uh-huh. And often, you know, meet different people, eat with different people. And, you know, there are a lot of people there who have done enormous things in the business world. You know, they have been CEOs of multinational corporations or run a big business or been in corporate law or things like that. And run foundations, and a lot of people who are interested in social issues in terms of you know, doing volunteer work or being on boards, and people there have quite a lot of money, many of them. And then there are people also, there are people who are still engaged in doing things. One of my best friends there is a woman, a writer, who has just published her 12th book. She's 89 years old. Uh-huh. And she is still, you know, she's still engaged in life. She's a food writer primarily. And her latest book is several essays that she's had in the New Yorker and all kinds of well-known publications. And she's in the midst of pitching a new TV show to Amazon, who are now producing their own shows. And so there are people like that who are still engaged in the world. And then people who have wonderful stories. People we found that there are five women there who lived in Europe during World War II and were adults during World War II. One of them is 104 years old.
Wow.
And she was in the British intelligence service during the war. And two of the other women were in concentration camps.
Wow.
And so when you hear the stories of these people, even though some of them are no longer able to be engaged in the world, they're still vibrant. They still care about what's going on in the world. And so they're fun to be around and to do things with, to go to plays and concerts with, and you know, to complain together about our experience.
So what I would say, it sounds like there's lots of vitality.
There is a great deal of vitality there. Uh-huh. There are so many talented artists there. I mean, really, really good artists, not people who've been drawing pictures all their lives. Very good, talented artists, and they have an art studio and a beautiful pottery studio and jewelry studio, all kinds of things for people to do. It's everyone should have an opportunity to live like this. It's quite remarkable.
Well, that's such good news for many people, I think, who look at these later stages of life with dread or denial, or, you know the territory, Pat, which is that people don't look at the positives.
Well, that's true. That's true. And you can't just say, look at the positives, because, you know, a lot of work that I do is with people who are thinking about what are they going to do in the next stage of their life. And, it's not just a cheerleading exercise, look at all you can do kind of thing. It's really going back to, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll now switch to the notion that if we commit to love, which is a good thing to do in life, we will probably commit to loss because we will lose loved ones, or they will lose us if we go first. So there's that sense of, it doesn't always have to be loss through death. It can be through physical separation or other means. But let's listen to Pat now talk about when we have those loving relationships, what are ways that we can stay through memory connected to the beautiful parts and still grieve the sense that it's over, and at the same time move on.
something useful comes out of almost every experience that we have. And to go back into your experiences, not just to look at the regrets, and not with a sort of Pollyanna-ish thing, like, you know, well, something good come, you know, everything was meant to happen. I don't go for that, but to go back and say, well, what, you know, what came of that means something to me now. You know, I'm not sure this totally applies to the loss of a loved one, but you can go back and look at and relive those times, what you learned from them, what their life meant to the world, you know, and keep them alive in that way. So I think it's more a matter of, it is this positive aspect, but it isn't just superficially positive.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I used to make fun of the shallow positive thinkers who would have that kind of every day in every way it's getting better and better. And I used to say, oh, give me a break, you know.
Right. Yeah. Some days are not better.
Yeah. Some days are tough.
Some days are really bad.
Yeah. So, so how have you, do you think, I'm asking four questions at once here, so let me narrow it down. What are the best strategies, if you can speak generally, because all of us are so differently wired, but if you can say anything about a general pattern, or at least some useful patterns, what are the best ways that you found to get past those difficult times, especially loss of a loved one? Because you've done that a couple of times, I know.
You know, I don't know that, I think it's such an individual thing, but I think that the one thing that the experience that I had, you know, I lost two sons. Mm-hmm. I've lost two stepchildren. Mm. And when my first son died, all I could think of was, you know, why didn't I love him more? Mm-hmm. Why wasn't I kind of, you know, it's sort of this I thing. What did I do wrong? You know, he died of a very bad illness, and you know, I felt that I should have been able to see that, as, even though he was a grown man, he died. It should have been something. Who knows? The guilt that you feel when you lose someone, or when someone is having a terrible problem physically or mentally. The responsibility you feel about that as a parent. And after a while, it occurred to me that when I was doing that, all I was thinking about was myself. I wasn't thinking about him. And so I started, you know, really consciously thinking more about him and what, you know, and remembering times that were good and little quirks about him and how he was so much his own person and his own thing in the world and you know, admired him for things that I might have been critical of him when he was younger. And I think that's what has helped me so much with losses. When I find myself getting into this place of it's all about me, you know, what did I do? What, you know, to bring them, to keep them alive.
Got it.
In my mind, rather than.
Got it. What I hear in there is less self-reference and more connection to the memory, to the positive memory and to the positive
memory. Yeah.
Let's end this episode of Stories for the Ages with some very wise words from Dr. Tom Cole, who wraps up for us the notion that loving and staying connected is how we develop as we age and what gives us meaning.
Two key words are love and community. Loving and being loved, there's no substitute for that. It gives a person a sense of why they're still here, that they are cared about, that they are needed, that they are loved. And it gives a person a reason to feel intensely and passionately, even at a very old age, about others, whether it's a single person, a mate or a lover or a family, and community and friendship. All the literature shows that longevity is positively correlated to community and to friendship. So I would say cultivate friendship, cultivate communities in your churches, in your synagogues, in your mosques, in your coffee shops, and love. And be concerned with the world that comes after you're dead. Right? Love what's going to come next. And that way, I think you'll comes the greatest possibility of satisfaction and the gifts that you have to give as you end your life.
This is John Schuster with Stories for the Ages. I want to thank our guests for their great words today. And I want to give special thanks to WOSU Public Media. This is a production of that group, to our manager, Tom Ryland, and to a great studio presence in Eric French, who's put our audio product together. Thanks again, listeners.